So narcissism, perhaps some definitions are in order for those of you who are not up on your Greek mythology. This is actually a term that does stem from Greek mythology. It's defined in the dictionary as a person who's suffering from great self-worship and egocentricity. There's something called in the United States called the DSM. It is what all psychologists and psychiatrists use to diagnose mental illness. So until recently, narcissistic personality disorder, was defined as a illness, as a mental illness. It's the type of person who's focused totally on himself and his needs, almost to the exclusion of everyone else. It stems from a myth in Greek mythology in which a person who's so in love with himself that he's looking for the perfect mate. This is a malady that affects even us today, looking for the perfect mate. At any rate, he chances upon a pond, and he sits down next to the pond, and he sees the reflection of himself in the pond, and he becomes in love with himself. He's so beautiful, he's so handsome, and he just sits there and stares at himself, totally wrapped up in himself, until eventually he shrivels up and dies. In that spot eventually grows a flower, which is called the narcissus, which I don't know if it's common in South Africa, but in American it's bilig vi borst. And that is part of the daffodil family, and that's where the flower narcissus comes from, named after Narcissus, this person who is in love with himself. It has always struck me that this myth in Greek mythology is similar to an incident in the Talmud, which the Talmud describes a similar incident, but with totally different results. The Gemara describes a person who became a Nazir, who became a Nazirite. A Nazir is prohibited from drinking wine, coming in contact with dead people, and he has to let his hair grow long. As a result of that, he becomes somewhat unkempt. So one of the sages of the Talmud asked him, "My son, why did you become a Nazir? You're such a beautiful person. Why did you decide to become a Nazir?" So the Talmud says that this person was sitting next to a pond, and he also saw his reflection in the water, and he also became in love with himself. But he saw that was what was happening to himself, and he was becoming enraptured with his own self. So at that point in time, he says, "I cannot let this happen. I cannot let the Yetzirah overtake me." And as a result of that, he decided to become a Nazir and to cut off his beautiful locks, because he knew what was happening down the road, and he did not want to happen to him. If you look at the contrast between the two people, the person in Greek mythology and the person in the Talmud, and their reaction to this, how one just falls further in love with himself. On the other hand, this person sees, he self-criticizes, says, "Look what's happening to me, I can't let this happen." That's the difference between the character in Greek mythology and the person of the Talmud. As I mentioned, that until recently, this has been a personality disorder that's been diagnosed. Why do I say until recently? Because in the 2013 edition of the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the United States, they are no longer going to list narcissistic personality disorder as a mental illness. Why is that? Is it because it's been cured? On the contrary, it has become so widespread, it is so much of an epidemic, it is even a pandemic, that they've decided that they cannot list this as a personality disorder, because if that's the case, then everybody is crazy. Which may be true. And if you'd like to read more about this, I recommend that you go to Amazon.com or some other bookstore and buy a book called The Narcissism Epidemic, which was written by two social scientists, not Jewish, in which they document throughout the entire book of how this has affected so much of society, so that they have in effect thrown up their hands and say, if we can't beat them, join them. I'm not going to give you a book review of the book, but let me just cite two anecdotal examples of what they give as how this has affected American society. I don't know if this is the case here in South Africa, but people in the United States today do not name their kids regular names. You know, when I was growing up, you named somebody Bob, Jane, Mary, Sue. Today, nobody just has a regular name in the United States. Matter of fact, sometimes I read about people in the newspaper and I can't figure out whether they're a boy or whether they're a girl. In the 1940s, 33% of all children born in the United States were given one of the most 10 commonly used names, which was in those days, James and Mary. Today, my child is not a Joe or a Mary. He's God's gift to humanity. And therefore, he has to have a unique name because he's a unique person. And thus, everyone has to have a unique name. And even if you are going to deign and name your son a common name like Michael, you can't spell it Michael. How do you spell Michael? Well, I was growing up, Michael was M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Today, Michael is spelled M-Y-C-H-A-L, because you're not just a regular Michael. You are a Michael. In the 1950s, 12% of high school seniors thought that they were, quote, a very important person. In the 1990s, 90% of all high school graduates think that they are a very important person. For what? For graduating high school? You know why they think like that? Because their parents have been telling them since literally day one that you're special. You're Michael, M-Y-C-H-A-L. And therefore people grow up with this inflated image of themselves. And my personal example, which may be lost on this audience because you don't follow American sports, but what we call football in America, when someone scores a touchdown, which is a goal, they launch into what's called a touchdown dance, in which every one of these people has their own singular way of demonstrating and celebrating his touchdown in the end zone. Now in America, football is the ultimate team sport. If it wouldn't be that the person passed the ball and the people blocked properly, this guy would not be in the end zone celebrating. So why is he doing a kazatska in the end zone? I watched football as a kid. You scored a touchdown, you put the ball down in the end zone, v'noimar amen. Why? Because I scored the touchdown. I could go on and on with examples that they marshal. But that they get on to a more serious aspect of this epidemic of narcissism. And that is that this focus on self has led to a sense of entitlement. And that is the subtitle of this book, the narcissism epidemic living in the age of entitlement. And this has literally affected America in ways that you cannot imagine. And as I told you last night, if it hasn't affected you yet, it's coming. Because everything from America gets exported to the world. We may be an importing company, but culture is what we are good at exporting. College professors complain that they get bombarded by students at the end of a semester say they, quote, deserve an A. Why do they deserve an A? If you get 90 and above, you get an A. You don't deserve an A unless you earned it. But it's the same product of being named Michael, M-Y-C-H-L. It's the same product of thinking that you're a very important person when you graduate high school, and therefore when you got to get a C in a college course, you go into the professor and you say, I deserve an A. The United States is recovering from a real estate bubble in which people paid exorbitant amounts of houses and took on mortgages that they could never afford. According to these sociologists of this book, you know what that is a function of? Because I deserve a bigger house. And therefore, I'm not just going to go ahead and live in a starter house like my parents started when they were first married. I want a house with all of its amenities, with a 3-car garage, and all the luxuries that come with a house, because I'm entitled to it. Because the world revolves around me. And therefore you fill in the blank. I deserve a bigger house. I deserve a bigger kitchen. I deserve a bigger car. I deserve. And again, one of my pet peeves is how inconsiderate people are with their cell phones. This is a Maisa Shehaya that was reported in the New York Times. Somebody was sitting at the New York Philharmonic listening to Gustav Mahler's Ninth Symphony. And in the middle of the concert, this guy's cell phone goes off. Not once, not twice, but several times. Until the conductor puts down his baton, looks at this fellow in the audience and says, are you finished? And I must say that in my 3 speeches that I have given today in South Africa, not once has a cell phone gone off. That's to your credit. Now wait 5 minutes, you'll see it'll have. In the United States, it's common to having a conversation with a person, and while you're having the conversation, they're texting. Yes, I'm listening. I hear every word that you're saying. Yeah, go right ahead. I hear, I understand it. Do you know how impolite that is? You know how inconsiderate that is? I mean, give the person the courtesy of looking at him. Ramesha Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Pesach Hador. Someone told me that he saw this incident. Ramesh was a prolific writer. He was constantly writing. The only way you could publish what he published is a person that was always writing. So he was once up in the mountains, the Catskill Mountains, during the summer. He was writing his Torah, and a little kid comes up to him and asks him a shaila. Probably, what bracha do you make on pretzels? Now, trust me, Ramesh Feinstein did not have to think much about the answer. He took his pen, he put it down, he looked at the child, heard his question, and gave him an answer. Because even a child deserves that courtesy. But now everybody's just texting. Somebody's told me that he's waiting for the day when a chosen and kala, bride and groom, will be standing under the chuppah, and the chosen will text to the kala, "Hare at mekudeshes li." And you know where it really hits home? It hits home when it comes to marriages. Because narcissists make terrible mates. Because it's very hard to have a loving, caring relationship. Marriage is all about thinking about somebody else. And if you're a narcissist, you're thinking only about yourself. And therefore, it is no wonder that the divorce rate in the United States is astronomical. Rav Dessler, the great mashgiach of the Gateshead Yeshiva and then subsequently of the Ponovitch Yeshiva, when he would perform a wedding under the chuppah, he would tell the chosan and kala, the bride and groom, he would tell them, this paraphrasing what he said, "At this moment, your greatest desire is to give to each other." He told them that the moment that stops and you start becoming a taker rather than a giver, the happiness and the bliss will desert your marriage. According to the latest census figures in the United States, 51% of all American households are headed by a single parent. That is the largest percentage in the Western world. And it all stems all the way back from little Michael, because his parents treated him like he was God's gift to humanity. He was doted upon, he was spoiled, he was made to feel that it's all about him. He had high school thought that he was a very important person. He walked into his professor's office and said, "I demand an A." He bought a house that he could not afford. And he got married to someone who thought he would fill his needs. And now he's no longer in the house and he's no longer married. Secular society may roll over and play dead and say, okay, it's a machas medina that affects the whole country. But what's the Torah perspective on this? How do we as Jews have to feel about this? What's our approach? So I'd like to cite you two sources. The Mishnah says in Masechta Avos, Ethics of the Fathers, Hu haya omer, Hillel used to say, Im ein ani li, mi li. U'kishani la'atzmi, mo'ani. Im ein ani li mi li, Judaism is not a religion that denies the importance of self. Judaism is a religion in which a person has to have a good self-image. Im ein ani li mi li, if I'm not going to take care of myself and worry about myself, then who is going to? But u'kishani la'atzmi, but if it's all about me, if it's about me, myself, and I, then mo'ani, then what am I? There has to be a balance between kshani la'atzmi, I have to take care of myself, but not only self. You know, Hasidim say that a person is supposed to have two pockets. And one, he's supposed to have a little piece of paper that says, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, which is a Gemara that the world is created for me. And in the other pocket, he's supposed to have a little piece of paper that says, Anochi Ofer Be'eh, for I am but mere dust. And we have to balance that. Reb Shimon Shkop, the great Grodno Rashiva, writes in the preface to his famous, very famous Sefer, he writes a very important thing. You know what the definition of godless is? Of greatness? The definition of greatness is how big is your ani? How big is yourself? The poshet, the person, the prust, the person, the simple person, his ani is me, myself, and I. If a person's a little bigger than that, then his circle of influence includes more than just me. It's me, my spouse, my children, my parents, but that's my world. But the true Adam Gadol, the great man, greatness is not merely measured by erudition. Greatness is measured by how big your ani is, how big your me is, what does your me encompass? And the true Adam Gadol, the true great person, is a person that his ani encompass himself and his wife and his children and his parents and his neighbors and his community. And if you're a true Adam Gadol, it encompasses all of Klal Yisrael. Think for a minute. Who's your image of an Adam Gadol, of a great personality in the Jewish world? Whether it's your Rav, your Rebbe, whether it's your Rashiva, but think about them. There's one common denominator that runs through all of them. Chassid, Misnagid, Sfardi, Ashkenazi. Whether it's the Satmar Rebbe, or whether it's the Ponovitch Rav, whether it's Rav Shach, or whether it's the Belzer Rebbe, whether it's the Ger Rebbe, or whether it's Reb Lazer Yudel Finkel. But there's one common denominator. There are people that thought about others. Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, Zichroni Livrocha, his wife was once facing serious surgery. So Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky asked someone who was going to Eretz Yisrael to go into the great Stipler Gaon, Rabbi Yankov Yisrael Kanievsky, and give him his name of his wife so that he could daven for his wife. Person goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's lucky to get in to see the great Stipler Gaon. He says, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky asked that you daven for his wife. He took the name, he says, I'll daven for his wife, your wife, his wife. The person is elated. He comes out of Stipler's apartment, he gets to a telephone, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, he calls Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky to tell him the good news that the Stipler is going to daven for his wife. But he forgot one fact, that it was 9 o'clock in the morning in Eretz Yisrael, it's 3 o'clock in the morning in the United States. Your wife's in the hospital, she's facing serious surgery. The phone rings at 3 o'clock in the morning. What do you think goes through your mind? Rabbi Yankov answers the telephone somewhat groggily. This person proudly tells him, I went into the Stipler. And the person chaps that Rabbi Yankov sounds like he's asleep. So what does Rabbi Yankov say? Are you out of your cotton picking mind? It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Do you want to scare me half to death? Or does he say, how was the flight? And how are you doing? And how does the Stipler look? to put this person at ease so he shouldn't feel like an idiot. That's the person that thinks about others. Last night, I defined our mission in life as being making Kiddush Hashem. That's our relationship between man and God. In 25 words or less, you know what the definition of our relationship should be between each other? Let me quote you the words of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the premier Talmud of the Gaon of Vilna, that he writes, Shezeh kol ha'adam. This is what man is all about. Loi la'atzmai hu nivra. He was not created for himself. Ela lahoyel la'achrini. To help others. Kefi mashi yochol la'asveis. What you're ever able to do for somebody else. That's why we were put on this earth. Zeh kol ha'adam. Think about somebody else. Not only yourself. Let me tell you, Maisa Shehayim, Paskin Ishaila. Each and every one of you, think how you would Paskin Ishaila. A couple has a baby boy. They want to make the bris in 8 days. Between the birth and the bris, someone living in their apartment also had a young child, whose name was Yonatan. That's the name they wanted to give their baby. And now a Yonatan in their building as a child, Renebuch unfortunately died. The father goes into Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and asks him a shaila. Can we name our child Yonatan? Is it a bad mazel? Is it a bad omen that we want to name him Yonatan, and a Yonatan, a child, just died in our building? Now, if you're familiar with Reb Shlomo Zalman's Torah and his way of paskening, I would have bet money on it, that Reb Shlomo Zalman would have told them, don't worry about it. Reb Shlomo Zalman said, don't name the baby Yonatan. So one of the Talmidim who was by Reb Shlomo Zalman asked him, why? Schlechte mazel? Bad omen? He said, nothing to do with that. But that little boy is going to grow up and his mommy's going to call him Yonatan, Yonatan, Yonatan. And every time that other woman hears that name, Yonatan, it's going to be a thorn in her side. So therefore, don't cause another Jewish problems and trouble. That's an Adam Gadol. Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel. Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, who was just nifter, was an incredible human being, afflicted with Parkinson's disease, and yet built Torah in the Eretz Yisrael in an incredible fashion. He had a Talmud who unfortunately died young, lived in America. Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel became in loco parentis. He took over the role of the parents, of the father. He took care of the boys. He made sure that they got into yeshivas. He would write them letters. They would send him his Torah. So someone told him that their daughter, their 8-year-old daughter, feels badly. You take care of the boys. You write to the boys. But she doesn't get anything from you. So you know, Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the great Mir Rashiba, you know what he did? He told someone, write me a picture of a heart. And in his shaking hand, he wrote in that heart, I love you, and sent it to an 8-year-old girl. That's an Adam Gadol. And the other source, very briefly, is a Gemara in Masechet Nedarim. The Gemara says in Nedarim that there are several types of people that are considered, even while they're alive, like they're dead. And the Gemara lists them. And they are an Oni, a person who's a pauper, who's destitute. A Metzaira, a person who's a leper. A Suma, a person who's blind. Arba, Chashuv, and Kemes. What's the common denominator of all these three? The Oni, the pauper, the Metzaira, the leper, the blind person. It's not that there's anything wrong with them, but all three of them can't do one thing, and that is they cannot give. They're on the receiving end. The blind person, unfortunately, doesn't see what's going around him. The leper is banished from the camp. The Oni always has to ask for others. That's what life is. Life is giving. Now, I heard a report on the radio. Employment in the United States is 8.2%. There was a woman, she was a successful working woman. She lost her job. She thought that after a while she would get a job back, because she didn't. She ran out of unemployment benefits. She was forced to sit on a street corner and beg, sit there with a cup, a respectable woman collecting money. One day somebody dropped $10 into her little cup. What did she do? What did a woman who has no food, who has no shelter, what did she do with the $10? She bought a birthday card for her daughter because she couldn't afford to do one until now. Because she wanted to give. The usher has notified me that I only have 10 minutes. What should we do with this, usher? Nothing personal. The Gallup organization, which is a polling organization in the United States, interviewed 372,000 senior citizens and asked them if they're happy. And they had a series of questions about what makes people happy. So one of the 372,000 people that they interviewed was an Orthodox Jew. The final question on the questionnaire is, are you part of an organized religion? So they get to the Frumma Yid after he takes this survey. They ask him the question, are you part of this of an organized religion? So being a Frumma Yid, he turns around and says to the questionnaire, what do you think? She says, yes, I think you are a religious person. He says, how do you know? Because the overwhelming majority of people that are happy belong to some type of religion. Be it Christian, Muslim, or Jew. But being part of a religion means that it's not only about you, it's about somebody else. So whether it's in the confines of the Roman Catholic Church or the mosque or the shul, lahavdil, but it's about somebody else. This is what human beings are about. God did not put us here on the thirst, that's for ourselves. So again, I'm getting to the end of the speech. Very nice to talk for 45 minutes about the problems, and what it means to be a Jew, and what you're supposed to do with one's life. But what's the Eitzah? How do you become a Nosein? How do you become a giver rather than a taker? So I only know of one Eitzah. The only way to be a giver is to start giving. And start with something small. When you go through a door, turn around and see if there's somebody else who's waiting, and hold the door for them. If someone does anything, say thank you and say, nice job. When I get off a plane, unless I have to use the air sickness bag, I will make a point of saying to the pilot, nice flight. It's small steps. But if you do this constantly, you're always looking for somebody else, looking to do for somebody else. It will become second nature and you will become a giver rather than a taker. And I can guarantee you, you will be a happier person thereof. Because unhappy people are focused on themselves, and invariably life always doesn't go our way. So if my life is always about me and I'm thinking only about me, I'll be unhappy. But if I'm not always thinking about myself, and less focused on myself, I will be a happier person. I had a friend who I knew for 25 years, never having smoked a cigarette in his life. He got lung cancer, Rahmana Litzlan. He fought it valiantly for 2 years. A month before he died, I went to visit him. He said, Rabbi Friend, I'm slipping away. He said, I want to tell you something, Rabbi Friend. My son-in-law came to visit me. And I have a shoe shine set. You know, today nobody shines their shoes. But if you're a cancer patient, Rahmana Litzlan, you're always on the receiving end. I looked at my son-in-law, I said, can I shine your shoes? And he took out his old shoe shine kit that had the electric thing, and he shined his son-in-law's shoes. He says, Rabbi Friend, you don't know how good I felt. I was able to give and not only take. One last story. I know a rabbi in Dallas, Texas. He had a congregant who was a doctor. She moved to Eretz Yisrael. She's a pediatrician. She's working in the pediatric emergency ward in a hospital in Eretz Yisrael. In the middle of the day, a woman comes in, a kala, dressed in her gown. Gown, veil, everything. The whole nine yards. What is she doing in a pediatric emergency room on the day of her wedding? Now, I don't know if you remember what it was like to be a bride, or you have to be, your daughter happened to be a bride. But people on the day of their wedding are usually very self-focused. The makeup has to be right. The hair has to be perfect. The mascara has to be perfect. There wasn't a movie called Bridezilla for nothing. And what does this kala do on the Yom Chupasa of Yom Simchas Libo? What does she do? She says, I came to the pediatric emergency room to give a bracha to every single child in this ward, because a kala on the day of her wedding has the koyach habracha, the ability to give brachas, and I want to give a bracha to each and every one of these children that they'll be better. On the day of her wedding, you know why? Shezeh kol ha'odom. This is what life is about. This is what being a human being is about. Loy la'atzmayu nivra. It wasn't put here for himself. Ela lahoy alachrini. To do for others. Kechol asher yachol la'aseis. Zehu kol ha'odom. Das ist der ganze Mensch. That's what being a human being is all about. That's our life on this planet, thinking about somebody else besides ourselves. Thank you.